Support for St. Louis Public Radio comes from The Rep, kicking off its new season with Dial M for Murder. High suspense unravels on The Rep stage as a murder plot spirals into chaos. Dial M for Murder opens September 18th. Tickets at repstl.org.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Democrat Randy McCallion is running for the second time to represent Missouri's 8th Congressional District. That's a swath of southeast and southern Missouri that has beautiful natural scenery, but also endemic problems with poverty and economic disinvestment. On the latest episode of Politically Speaking, McCallion talks about the big challenges confronting the 8th District and why she would be a better representative of the area than Republican Congressman Jason Smith. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining us from the Phelps County metropolis of Rolla, Missouri, my special co-host today is...
I'm Jonathan Aul. I'm the Rolla correspondent and interim managing editor at St. Louis Public Radio.
And our special guest today, she is the Democratic nominee in Missouri's 8th Congressional District.
Hello, I'm Randy McCallion. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your professional background.
Yeah, so I have a background in family and child health. I've spent most of my life, about the last 20 years, working with families and children in programs like Parents as Teachers and Autism Services, Early Head Start. And then I went and got my master's degree in public health because I was starting to see that the way to be most effective for removing barriers for families and helping children and families to thrive was policy. And so I got my master's degree in maternal and child health because I like to be effective, or the most effective that I can be. And starting before even the beginning of life is where we need to start to make sure that we have healthy and productive adults in the future. Let's see, more about me. I'm a mom and a wife, and I'm attempting to grow food and start a farm with my husband here in the Mark Twain National Forest. And mostly there's just a lot of ticks, chiggers, and trying to, you know, to shift that into food growing and learning what we can. And now I am a voice for the 8th Congressional District because they deserve much better than what they've got.
Randy, why did you decide to get involved in Missouri politics, especially in the 8th Congressional District?
I started getting involved in politics, lobbying and advocating for maternal and child health, specifically for improving our maternity care system. And that led me down a path to just better understanding how our political system works and how we can get policy passed. And I started volunteering on campaigns and then started to see, wow, you know, I could do this. And, you know, I am a part of the 8th Congressional District. I'm raising my children here. And I see, well, let's step back just one second. I'm an Army brat, so I have lived in a lot of places in the country. And I bring that knowledge with me here to the Congressional District and to this area of Missouri. And I can see how we deserve so much better here. And another piece of that puzzle is that my mom taught U.S. government and history and civics in public schools while I was growing up. And I started to realize in my profession and my field that I had a lot more knowledge and understanding of policy creation and legislation and how the barriers we saw for families were because of policy. And it just sort of became a path that I didn't know would be my path, that politics is now what I do because people deserve to have a government that is made up by them and working for them. And that's not what we have here in Missouri, or especially in the 8th Congressional District.
In 2022, you ran against Jason Smith and you lost 76% to 22%. Why are you choosing to run again?
I'm a glutton for punishment. I believe deeply in a democracy. And what I see in Missouri with a 22-year supermajority with the GOP, you know, Republicans have had a supermajority in our state legislature for 22 years. And what I see here in the 8th Congressional District is pretty much an autocracy at this point. There is not a two-party system here. There is one party in control. And you don't have a democracy if you don't have choices. And whether we can win or not, which it'll be a while, you're still giving people a choice. You're still holding an elected representative accountable. And there are so many reasons to run, even when you can't win a seat immediately. And for example, we will kick Josh Hawley out of his seat by motivating just a few more voters in the 8th Congressional District, because the 8th District has some of the least voter turnout in the state. And to me, that shows that they don't see themselves being represented. They don't even have anyone to vote for. And so when you can get out and start engaging with people who feel like the government has left them behind and that there's no one in their local government to represent them, then you really start to make local change. You really start to give people a voice and you help them to lift their community and to make things better and not make people feel so helpless because they don't have any choices and they don't have any say. So I believe it's deeply important to run for seats where you're not going to win this round or maybe the next one.
Well, I mentioned the 76 to 22. There's a couple other numbers I want to throw your way. During that same election, recreational marijuana was also on the ballot. And about 60% voted against it and about 40% voted for it in the 8th district. So there were a number of people who cast ballots in favor of recreational marijuana and for Jason Smith. How do you approach this race, considering that there seem to be a number of people who still want to vote for the incumbent Republican, even though they directly have different views on some issues than he has?
What I see there out of my district, and one of the reasons that I promised my district I would run for two cycles at least, was so that we could deeply understand what is happening in the 8th, what does the 8th need, and what is our current situation. What I see from what you just brought up is that we don't hold Jason accountable in the 8th Congressional District at all. And when I say we, the local news, the radio, even currently elected representatives up and down the ballot in the 8th, no one's actually holding Jason accountable for his votes, for the actions he does or does not take. I understand that our local news media is struggling, you know, don't have enough reporters, they don't have enough money, they don't have enough folks even subscribing. So what's ended up happening is that someone like Jason, an elected representative, gets to send to these local papers anything he wants, and they print it. And there aren't enough staff to even hold Jason accountable. So the people of the 8th largely do not even know what Jason has or hasn't done beyond what he tells them. And he's a liar. So it has been a part of my role and my job as I recognize this to help other people see that. And let me give you an example. Last year, the Missouri S&T received a bunch of funding from the CHIPS and Science Act, and they had a press release And in that press release, they gave Jason an entire paragraph where he praised Missouri S&T. He talked about how funding for the important things and research that Missouri S&T does is so important, and Jason so supports them. So if you read that, you'd think, wow, Jason's a great representative. He's really supporting our district growing and getting some funding in our university. The press release, nor any of the local papers that picked it up, like the Phelps County Focus, not one single person pointed out that Jason Smith voted no on the CHIPS and Science Act. And yet he was given space in the press release, which was then picked up by all local papers. It's disinformation. Maybe misinformation, feels like disinformation. So our district is essentially being lied to. And in a district where poverty is extensive and systemic poverty at this level is the fault of elected representatives, no individual's fault. When you have extensive poverty, when people have to drive 30, 45 minutes to a grocery store and their car doesn't operate well, and they've got a farm to take care of, and they've got children, and our schools are only 4 days a week, so you've got your kids home on Mondays usually. All of that, it makes sense that a lot of people don't have the time and ability to look into their elected representatives, to look at voting records. And it is the role of local news media to hold elected representatives accountable, to praise them when they've done well for a district or their people, and to hold them accountable and tell them when they've done wrong. And what I see across the 8th, as I've been doing this work for 2.5 years now, is that there is almost no one in local news media holding Jason accountable. And that's a problem. So most people, as I talk to them, are bothered and upset when they see what Jason is or isn't doing.
Yet he keeps getting reelected. This is a congressional district that's been in Republican hands since the 80s. It used to be Democratic a long, long time ago. But the Republican stranglehold seems to have gotten more since Donald Trump became the leader of the Republican and conservative movements. Why do you think that's been the case, especially since, by your metrics, things have gotten worse in the 8th?
Absolutely. There are not, or there have not been, Democrats largely down ballot in the 8th congressional. This is something that Jess Piper has spoken about a lot because she's lived in a very rural area for a while. And I have now deeply felt and understood this. There aren't Democrats running down ballot. And that's been that way for quite some time here. So when you have a party who is built upon now for the last 30 years, the Republican Party has largely built itself on demeaning Democrats. And then in an area like mine, where the Democratic Party started to focus more on larger cities, and so the support for down ballot races in a rural area like ours, where there are no large cities, started to dwindle, and there were less Democrats on the ballot, what happens is that the voices talking poorly about Democrats, and then there's no local Democrats running to counter that message, we have lost face here in the 8th as Democrats, because no one was standing up and saying, hey, I'm a part of your church and I'm a Democrat, or running for those seats. And as we know, if no one's running, no one's getting to those doors, right? No one is local doing that work. We can't have a Democrat running for governor, for example, knock every door in the state. So Democratic voices got quieter and quieter in districts like mine. And then whatever the Republican Party said about Democrats became the only message in the district.
So I want to move on to issues, and there's something that you said that I want to touch on more about how the 8th district has systemic poverty problems. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the poorest congressional districts in the nation. I have my own theories about why it hasn't gotten better, but I'd be interested to hear what you would want to do to make it one of the less poor congressional districts in the nation, and what policies you would support in Congress to help people who are in poverty.
Excellent. And I'm glad you brought that up. Our district used to be heavily into manufacturing. There were a lot of unions. There was a lot of manufacturing type work that, you know, really helped people have good paying jobs in our district. And as globalization occurred, a lot of that manufacturing was pulled out of the eighth. We started losing those jobs. And I do believe a part of that was that we didn't have someone fighting for us to keep those jobs. More recently, you know, Jason Smith has been our congressperson for 11 years now. And in that time, since earmarks have come back to Congress, Smith hasn't brought any to our district. Josh Hawley hasn't brought any to the state of Missouri. So that, again, is a double impact against my district. And if you have people like Smith voting against the CHIPS and Science Act, for example, we have a district who is set that is set up and would be wonderful for a chip manufacturing facility. And instead, we have a congressperson who isn't fighting for us to have any jobs in the 8th Congressional District. Another example would be the Tyson chicken plant in Dexter that closed. Jason had received money from Tyson. And then we lost a facility in Dexter and lost at least 700 jobs, including all of the farmers who were doing the contracts with their chickens to provide chicken. So there's been a number of things over time, but more recently, I can point my fingers directly at Jason Smith and say he's not bringing any of our federal funding back to this district. And then other districts take our federal tax dollars. So my district is paying out federal taxes, but we have nobody representing us who brings them back. I also see brain drain here. And that term refers to losing people in the area with skills and long-term knowledge, and also your younger workers who would be able to put in a lot of effort that brings tax dollars back to the district, right, through those manufacturing jobs. So because there hasn't been a lot of opportunity here, because we've lost healthcare, because there's less universities, because there's less jobs, our younger folks, when they graduate high school, take off. And they leave. And most families want them to go somewhere where there's more opportunity. And that has also contributed to our district losing money.
I want to talk about healthcare for a minute. One of my friends is from Donovan, Missouri, in Ripley County. And I went to, during the pandemic, I had this trend where I needed to get out of the house. And I went to state parks in the 8th Congressional District, and I made sure to go to some of the communities that were next to the state parks to see what they looked like. And I'd always wanted to see what Donovan looked like because my good friend is from there. And it was disconcerting to see how empty everything was there and how economically ravaged some of those cities could be. And what my friend told me is one of the reasons is because there used to be a hospital in Donovan and there isn't one anymore. And if you're a family that has chronic healthcare needs, you're going to move to a community that has a hospital. So people that lived in Donovan for a while probably moved to Poplar Bluff or Cape Girardeau or Rolla. So what would you do as a congressperson to make sure there are more healthcare facilities in more parts of the district?
It was largely the lack of Medicaid expansion that caused these rural hospitals to have to close and leave. And that was, again, on Missouri's Republican supermajority, that the people of Missouri wanted to expand Medicaid and they refused. So then we started losing hospitals, because when people without health insurance go to a hospital, the hospital doesn't get paid for the care that they gave, right? And Medicaid expansion was supposed to do that. So one of the things that my background is in healthcare. And so one of the things that I'd like to see our country do, and if I were elected as congressperson, that I would be pushing for, is to increase access to downstream healthcare providers. The medical establishment has a very strong lobby, and they have kept a lot of power in the hands of doctors. And one of the things that we should absolutely be doing is opening more access to advanced nurse practitioners, for example. so that more people can have access to quality healthcare. And we don't just need more doctors. Another good example of this would be midwives. We need more midwives in the country, and especially in rural areas. And midwives don't just have to deal with prenatal and birth and postnatal care. They can also give well woman care throughout a woman's lifetime. And there's no movement really to do that. So what I've seen is that there's been movement to pull healthcare away from these areas and not necessarily steps to make sure that there's more access. One of the programs that I directed for 3 years in the past was a maternal and child health program that used community health workers to do education and support in the community. We trained people from their own community to be lactation counselors and doulas, people who support people through childbirth. And both of those roles make motherhood, infant feeding, birth, pregnancy safer and have better outcomes. And we need to be expanding funding, training programs, and practice for downstream healthcare providers. And then we would have some more healthcare access in the eighth. And we'd also be able to have more people have good paying jobs, right? A midwife, a nurse practitioner, a community health worker. You mentioned Ripley, though. And yeah. I want to bring something up real quick that is happening throughout this district. And Ripley was one of them that I spent some time in this year. Well, every county, right? But in Ripley, I spoke to some of their county commissioners who were running in the primary, because that's when most of our people in the eighth get elected, is the primary, right? And in Ripley, they don't have enough funding right now to build a new courthouse or to fix the one they have. And while I was down there, the local sheriff and fire chief were both talking about how every time they exit their own building, if they smell anything burning, they look straight to the courthouse because they all expect the courthouse to go down soon. But they have no money to either fix it or to build a new one. So that's it. It's going down and there's no plan and no ability to move forward. When the census came out, they lost a lot of funding because they've lost over 4,000 people in their county in the last 10 years. The county commissioner there, when I said, how do you feel when you hear statewide Republican candidates talk about ending property tax? And he said, it's the end of our county for sure. So our local Republicans in local county positions are not on the same page as the statewide Republicans running in bigger cities who are talking, for example, about deport everyone who actually does the work on these farms that we need, right? That's different than what we're hearing statewide. But in counties like Ripley and Douglas, they have no way to operate anymore. They've lost their money, their funding. And so again, they feel left behind. And we need new voices to tell them how to lift back up.
It seems though that that is 100% wrong now, that all politics are national. Because when you look at the way local races are run, you know, in for example, in the Republican primary for governor, you know, border security seemed to be the thing that people were hammering on the most. Not a Missouri issue. It is a national issue if, you know, it, however you fall on that. I'm wondering how you combat that narrative and try to get people to talk about what is specifically happening in the 8th district when the political pendulums seem to be swinging to try to only talk about national issues in every race.
That's excellent. And you are right, because a lot of people here that are a lot of the Republicans who I have met at a number of events, quite a few of them who aren't running. So there's where I'll make a difference. If there are Republicans in the 8th running, they are hyper-focused on their local government. So like those county commissioners in each of those counties, they're hyper-focused on the people that they serve and what they do and do not have in their county. But the people slightly paying attention at some level to politics in the 8th are getting caught up in some of that national dialogue. The way I've countered some of those is by simply asking people to work through or talk through what that policy would look like with me. And it starts to get some of those people to see how big government those policies are. So an example, I was in Douglas County, and they're yet another county who doesn't even have a 911 call center in my district. And so there's a few counties like Bollinger and Douglas where you call the sheriff when you have an emergency. They send the ambulance as best they can to your address, and then they drive you at least 45 minutes to a hospital. So we have a higher rate of death in this district. And that's one of the reasons is you have a stroke, you have an hour until you're getting emergency care at a hospital. So I was talking about asking people to think through a policy with me. So when I had someone say, you know, what are we going to do about illegal immigrants here? And I said, well, largely in the eighth, that's not an issue we face. But let's talk about what that policy would look like. And as I walk through that with someone, they really start to see that, how is that really something we should be focused on here when someone needs to ride an hour to the hospital for healthcare? I have my thought back, though, from that healthcare thing, which touches on this, too. Internet. So when we get better broadband access throughout my district, we will have more access to healthcare, to telemedicine. And that's largely a local issue. But a lot of people think it's national. So what I've been teaching people as I go around is a lot of our areas, actually our 8th Congressional District is one of the least connected in the country compared to other rural districts as well. And when I go around, I remind people how much their government and what they have around them is local. Because, for example, all the money that we need to put the entire 8th Congressional District on broadband exists. The federal government has marked that money. All we need is local city councils and county commissioners to make a plan, have a contract with a company, and request that money. And that's not happening through much of our district. When people hear that, it shakes them a little because they don't even realize how local these issues are to them. And instead, it's, we don't have good internet here, Biden failed. No. Biden laid the money out. It is your local city council and your county commission that didn't request the money. And it's one person at a time, right? We know that these movements, that information, one person at a time. But then that one person demands better of their city council, demands better of their county commission, starts seeing maybe the people that aren't doing that work, and maybe they will now step in and run for something, right? So change is slow. But also bringing people back to the topics that are directly important to our district. So if someone's talking about national kind of issues like the border, I sometimes will joke with them and say, you know, we have a lot of Missourians in Southeast Missouri cross the Arkansas border to go get healthcare or jobs in Arkansas. So I think it's important we leave that Arkansas-Missouri border open until we're doing better here in Southeast Missouri. They may not appreciate the joke all the time, but I do hope that it connects them with the idea that we need better here and we need to stop focusing way down there at the border, which, by the way, if we were to close that border, we would tank our own economy. So it's really a ridiculous topic to be talking about in such an extreme way.
You alluded to this earlier that maybe you don't expect to win, but you do see some value in your running. I'm wondering, especially because, and at the recording of this program, we don't know for sure if the abortion amendment's going to be on the ballot or not.
Yeah, we're literally recording this at 10:30 on September 10th. So
anxiety's high.
This will be posted afterwards. So I want to make that clear. So continue, Jonathan.
So if the abortion amendment is on the ballot, do you see your role on the ballot being to make the vote totals on the abortion amendment maybe closer to 60-40 instead of 70-30, the vote totals for Josh Hawley versus Lucas Kuntz being more 60-40 versus 70-30? Because as Jason Rosenbaum has pointed out many, many times on this and other shows, that what Democrats need isn't necessarily to win rural counties, but to lose by less. So do you think your presence will make Democrats and Democratic issues lose by less, which can make them win statewide.
Yes, that is one of the reasons to run for a seat that many people would tell you is unwinnable. And I would tell you there's a lot more things that you can win than just the seat. And so you're exactly right. What I see in this district is that it's the least engaged district. A lot of people would say the reddest district. But when you look at the data, we also have some of the lowest voting turnout. So it's the reddest because people didn't see options for them on their ballot. Now they have more options. So in 2020 and 2022, the 8th Congressional District only ran 5 state House candidates out of 23 House districts. And this year we have 16 state House candidates, Democrats, running in the 23 state House districts in the 8th. So before, all of those other seats, 18 of them, were uncontested. And now only 8 of them are uncontested. So when that happens, you have local candidates who inspire their local friends, their neighbors, people that have worked with them. They see someone who cares directly about them and who they know directly. And so then they start engaging more in that system. And I think I mentioned it earlier, but we really only need a boost of like 3% more people engaging. And it's not even unregistered voters. We just need 3% more of registered voters who don't typically engage in elections to show up. And we can change things up the ballot from the 8th Congressional. So like you said, ending Josh Hawley's useless time in the Senate and getting something like fair wages passed and the right to medical privacy and bodily autonomy in the state of Missouri, which is the Amendment 3, quote unquote, abortion amendment.
We'll be right back on Politically Speaking with 8th Congressional District candidate Randy McCallion. And we're back on Politically Speaking with Randy McCallion. She is the Democratic nominee in Missouri's 8th Congressional District. You mentioned President Biden, I think, in one of your previous answers. What is kind of voters' impressions of how his presidency has been? And also, is there anything that he's done over the last 4 years that you profoundly disagree with?
I think I'm going to do to you what I do to people in my district. When they bring up Biden, I say, you know, Biden has very, very little impact on the way we live in the 8th Congressional District and on our day-to-day lives. It's largely your local government and your state government that have an impact on your jobs, on housing, on our rural health care, right? So when folks try to talk about Biden, that's typically what I bring them back to, because when people are talking about Biden, they're expressing discontent typically to me. You know, most of the people I'm talking to out in the district lean Republican or aren't voting. And so there's discontent or anger, you know, things aren't good here and Biden didn't do a good job. And so I pull them back and I say, well, how long have things not been going well here? How long do you think we've been losing jobs? How long have our roads been crumbling, our bridges going down and losing healthcare? And it's generally the last 20-ish years is what most of my older residents will say. And then I will point out for them, because none of them have known this, that they have had a Republican supermajority for 22 of those years. So if you're frustrated by what you see around you in Missouri, that's on Republicans, not the president, and not Biden for just 4 years of his presidency when this has been happening for much longer. Something that I'm disappointed in Biden, I would say not being more bold. I feel and I hear from people around the district that they think that Democrats are kind of weak. And when you compare us to the Republican Party, who has kind of let all the rules go out the window, all sort of sane and friendly political conversation is gone, and Democrats keep trying to hold on to that, that's starting to appear weak. And even to me, And I will hold my own party accountable 100%. And I haven't always been a Democrat. I was definitely more independent as a younger person, but you need to run with a party to run. So the Democratic Party is absolutely more aligned with me because I believe in democracy and freedom from government intervention in my personal life. So I would say Biden not being bold enough. I would have liked to see him, for example, forgive all student loan debt, because that's going to lift a lot of families and a lot of elderly people who are all struggling under that debt, including my family. And I would have liked to see Democrats push a few things through, like the child tax credit. And, you know, some people would push back on me now and say, oh, but that's not Biden's place, right? We need to write policy with Congress. Well, see, the Republican Party isn't following those rules anymore either. So I just really don't understand why we aren't fighting harder for democracy as the Democratic Party.
You mentioned child tax credit. That is something that Jason Smith did work on. He was behind a proposal that would have modestly raised the child tax credit, but also increased some business-related tax incentives. That passed the House, didn't get through the Senate. What did you think of that proposal? And would you have taken a different approach with the substance of that bill?
I am not directly familiar with what you're asking about. But what I have seen from Jason's work is when he does something that appears to be good for, like, his constituents, let's say, or for the people of America, it tends to be time sensitive, so that he will look good temporarily, but something that would help us will expire. For example, right now, he's railing on the fact that it will be the Democrats that allow the Trump tax cuts to expire, when in reality, it was Jason Smith himself who was part of writing in the date of that expiration. And it was done purposefully to be at the end of the next presidential cycle. So for me, what I see out of Jason is everything he does is self-serving, and it is not for the people of the United States, and it is definitely not for his district.
You've mentioned Joe Biden. We've talked about Kamala Harris. You've also talked very strongly about your preference for people thinking down ballot when they vote, but the top of the ticket has changed from Joe Biden to Kamala Harris. How do you feel that will affect your goals of trying to get Democrats at least on the ballot and considered in the 8th district? How do you think that change will play out for what you're hoping to accomplish?
Personally, I was very nervous when that switch first occurred and had a lot of PTSD, we might say. But since then, I have seen so much excitement and enthusiasm, and I feel it myself. Kamala has a lot of energy. She's an extremely intelligent leader. She has empathy. And those are things that I want to see from my leadership. And I wanted younger choices as well. And I'm very happy to have them. I, like many women in this country and men, also want to see a female president. Women bring a different perspective to leadership. Women bring a different perspective and different actions to the work that they do. And I want more of that. And one example I can give from healthcare is that women doctors have better bedside manner than male doctors. And bedside manner, kind of that respect that you give to a patient, is huge, because it's how you feel about the treatment you received. And the way we feel is largely tied up with how we will do. And so I'm excited for the excitement I see. I'm excited that more women feel like they have a voice. And I'm excited that that we got what we were asking for. We were asking for younger candidates, and we have it now. And as our politics have gotten a little crazier and crazier, it feels like lately, this is just sort of another one of those changes that none of us have really experienced before in our lifetime. And I think it's an exciting one. And I look forward to the debates tonight.
Randy, thank you so much for joining us. And I just want to mention for our listeners, we have invited Congressman Smith to also come on the show, and we hope to have him to provide his case for reelection in the future. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. You can read all of our coverage of the 2024 election at stlpr.org. And Randy, how can people find out more about your campaign on the World Wide Web?
Yeah, so if you look me up, it's Randy, R-A-N-D-I, McCallion, M-C-C-A-L-L-I-A-N. Randy McCallion is my website. You can go to that. We're also very active on Facebook because Facebook is one of the more important social medias in a district like mine. So Facebook is one of the best places to follow, and that's at Randy McCallion as well. And you can reach out to me if anyone would like to chat. I do a lot of chatting with folks, and most of them are Republicans. So feel free to reach out.
Thank you very much. And until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.